Good morning.
Good morning.
That's how I do it.
Good morning. Good morning. I'd like to call the House Finance, Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. The time is 9:02. Today we will take up the committee substitute for the operating budget, House Bill 72 and House Bill 73, the mental health budget. We do have a CS, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I move that the House Finance Committee move CS for HB 72 Finance 29-GH1780/G out of committee with individual recommendations.
Backslash E?
Oh, G. E is mental health.
G. I will object for discussion. President Gaddis.
I guess point of order. We were here awfully late last night, and so you didn't call roll call or anything like that, and I don't know if that's appropriate. And I apologize, but I know we were here late.
Wilson, we go home? Guerra, Pruitt, Kawasaki. I just want to get things done. Representative Sadler, Representative Thompson, Newman, Guttenberg, Gaddis, Edgman, and Munoz. Thank you, Representative Gaddis. Okay, with that, we do have the committee substitute for House Bill 72, backslash G in front of us. Staff will come up and talk about it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the record. My name is Pete Eklund, staff to Co-Chairman Newman and the Finance Committee. After incorporating all the amendments made yesterday, let's give you the big picture numbers, Mr. Chairman. The net effect of all the different amendments that were adopted in UGF terms, and I'm going to concentrate on unrestricted general funds because the difference between unrestricted general funds, revenue, and expenditures equals our fiscal gap. That's why I'll concentrate on those. The net effect of all the amendments yesterday, Mr. Chairman, was the committee added back $10,491,000 of funds, unrestricted general funds. And the total reduction, Mr. Chairman, from FY15, the current fiscal year, in agency operations, non-formula programs, is $228,972,000 of unrestricted general funds. When you add in the formula programs, Mr. Chairman, from the operating budget, so numbers and language, formula and non-formula, unrestricted general funds, we are $376,931,000 below the current fiscal year. And Mr. Chairman, I would just point out, I guess I should have stated on the non-formula programs, the agency operations, that's what typically most people think of state government is when they think of what the departments do, and that's the non-formula programs, and that is it's a 10% reduction from the current fiscal year, Mr. Chairman, over all state agencies. And further, if the operating bills passed the full legislature the way they look today, and if the capital budget stayed at its current level of $158.7 million, the pre-transfer change in unrestricted general fund revenues from the current fiscal year is we would have reduced the budget by $560.5 million from the current fiscal year, Mr. Chairman. That's quite an accomplishment, quite a feat. And the pre-transfer deficit, if revenues stayed as projected, would be $3.26 billion, Mr. Chairman. That's what I have for you.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Eklund, Representative Guerra?
Yes, Chair. Pete, you mentioned that you added $10 million in unrestricted general funds, or the committee did yesterday. There were all those funds that were taken out of the higher education fund. Those are in the general fund, but do you consider those unrestricted, or is that money that was added in addition to the $10 million in the way you're categorizing it?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, those are designated general funds. That's how those are categorized, not unrestricted.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerra?
They're in the general fund, though, so how much was added there, too?
If memory serves, Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra through the chair, $7,007,000.
So those two together, somewhere around $17, $18 million?
Correct.
Mr. Eklund? The $7 million that was added to supplement other funds for some other education programs is in the higher education fund. Is that different than the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the higher education fund has been classified as designated general funds. They were set aside. The fund was created to provide scholarships and the performance scholarship. And the programs that the committee used those funds for yesterday were connected to the performance scholarship and attaining that, and so that's why they were used for those purposes.
And there are specific uses that those funds can be used for, and we strictly held it within those guidelines?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As you're aware, there are no dedicated funds per our Constitution, but we have designated funds, and as far as the guidelines for those use of those funds, it was within those guidelines.
So unrestricted general funds, there was an addition of about 10.4?
That's correct.
Thank you. Further questions? Hearing and seeing none. I will remove my objection. Do you have a motion to move the bill?
Still maintain mine.
I did make the motion. You rejected it.
I remove my objection. Representative Guerra maintains his objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hoping this could have been a bill that I could vote for. But including the ads yesterday, really the difference is still between a $3.5 billion deficit roughly from the governor or a $3.4 billion deficit in this bill. We run out of savings in 2 years under either version. That's not really the fault of the committee. That's just a reflection of the fact that you could fire every general fund-funded state employee in the state and still not solve the budget gap. And that's just a message that whether you're Republican or Democrat, nobody's been able to get out to the public, which is $3.5 million without shutting down state government and getting rid of public safety and almost everything we rely on in the state. You just can't cut $3.5 billion. And so Republicans tried to find waste. Democrats tried to find waste, and this is where we are. So that's not blame. That's just a little bit of education as people move forward to try and figure out how to deal with the fiscal problem. I'm very disappointed we didn't accept Medicaid expansion. That's $6.6 million in extra savings in the budget. It's 4,000 jobs. It's health care for people. And it's reduced premiums, I think, for other people so they don't have to pay for uncompensated emergency room care, which they have to pay for today because people don't have coverage. I don't even know how to say what I feel about this accurately. I'm a strong believer in pre-kindergarten. We know it works. We know it increases academic achievement, college graduation, decreases the cost of jail. We know that from the studies. It's evidence-based. And this committee got rid of every single state-funded pre-K program we have in the state yesterday. I don't know how many other states have done that. I think at least 40 have statewide pre-K. We barely have state-pocked pre-K now. A couple of school districts here and there, and what's left over for the federally funded Head Start program, which the state has increased funding for twice in the last 20 years. But the waiting lists there are so big, people don't count it anymore. I'm disappointed that weren't able to pass either version of our K through 12 funding amendments. The more modest one would have just reinstated the amount of money that was passed last year. Even with that amount, that amount's going to lead to cuts in Mat-Su, significant cuts in Fairbanks, significant cuts in Juneau. And then we weren't able to, and then by not even restoring the amount of money that was passed last year, you'll probably see cuts in Anchorage too, though Anchorage is the best off of the school districts because they have that reserve fund. But in other districts, things are going to be bad. And so it's another year of teacher or guidance counselor or career counselor cuts, and I don't see how you move education forward in a state that has the lowest graduation rates in the country that way. As you know, I was disappointed that we had a chance to make the biggest stride since I've been here in fixing the system for abused and neglected children at no cost, because the department did a very good job in finding available federal funds to replace money they were spending state money on, and they had proposed to use that money to fix the foster care system. So we don't have a 40% homelessness rate for foster youth and don't have a 24% incarceration rate for foster youth. For no cost, we could have fixed that and made things a lot better for the 2,400 youth in foster care. I hope that's a discussion we can have as we go on, because I know people in this committee care. There's not a single person on this committee that doesn't want to help kids. But I don't know another way to do it when the state has had a study for the last 4 years sitting on a shelf saying we were 50 staff short just to do our basic functions, and then since the number of foster kids have increased by about 500 since then, probably 80. We could have done a ton to fix that yesterday at no cost. So I'll work with folks. I've always been asked to find things that are cost efficient. We've started a free program to get laptops to foster youth. We've started a free program to get discount clothing to foster youth. We've tried to get a free program to get Imagination Library books to foster youth. We're trying to do things in a cost effective way to improve the lives of these children. These are damaged lives. When you take a child away from their parents, you've damaged them. Maybe not your fault. It's almost all those cases, it's the parents' fault. But there are legal guardians at that point, and we should act like legal guardians. We proposed a number of cuts, including cuts to money that's been appropriated for the Susitna Dam that's not obligated and not needed. You can decide at a future point whether or not to move ahead with that project, but that's a project that serves the same exact people as the three gas line proposals that are sitting out there serve, and all four of those projects provide excess power. You don't need four pieces of excess power for the same exact people when you're in a fiscal crisis. So, Mr. Chair, for an amount that still leaves us running out of savings in 2 years, those cuts, I think, didn't move the ball forward. I, to say the least, am disappointed, but hopeful that we can find a way to work together and solve at least some of these problems. I don't want to be the state that doesn't have any pre-K. I mean, that's a Republican and Democratic thing across the country because it works. People understand it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then these are closing discussions here, so everybody's going to get one bite at the apple if people feel they need to speak. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And last night I thought that there were times that I was actually agreeing with my colleague across the way with the same initials, and I find myself agreeing this morning. I, too, am disappointed. Well, my disappointment is that as I hear folks talking back and forth that we need to add back, take away, at the end of the day, we are jumping off a cliff. And I'm not sure if our folks back home recognize that. Folks in my district have been very, very clear that we didn't cut enough out of this budget. They know, they've looked at it, and I got calls when I got home last night that we could have done a lot better. In the spirit of compromise, there were things that we added back in that I personally would not have, but in that same spirit, I did add them back in. But now we're at where we are, and we have to show some leadership that we recognize where we're at. I mean, we're not going to be able to make it if we do not make these cuts. So $10 million plus add-back, I really have a struggle with that. That being said, you know, hopefully in the spirit of compromise that we can move forward, but I'm hoping both sides recognize we just don't have the money. We said it over and over last night. We just don't have the money to add back in. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My friend to my left, I got a little confused. First, I heard that we didn't cut enough out of the budget, but then he talked about things that he should have been added back in. I got a little confused with that. I'm amazed that we're sitting here and people are going to be suffering from the cuts we've made. They really have. And the big thing that we have to look at is next year. It's not going to get any better. It's probably going to be a lot harder in year next year. And this is just the first bite of the apple that we're trying to make people understand that, you know, there's going to be more reductions in what we've already done. How are we going to get through this before our savings is completely ran out? This committee, I'm just amazed and proud of, because they've worked so hard and spent a lot of hours trying to put together something to where that we can have those reductions without devastating a lot of people in this state. My co-chair has been incredible in the amount of hours he's put in, and I'm got to say thank you very, very much, because you really did take it to heart and have really worked hard to try to make sure that we all get to that point where that we aren't comfortable with it, but we can move forward for the next 12 months. This committee is going to be working more than they ever have through the summer months, digging into their staff, looking at programs, and trying to figure out what do we do next year. And this is just setting the stage for next year. And I want to thank the entire Finance Committee for the hard work they put in. Thank you.
Representative Thompson. Representative Pruitt.
Sure. Sometimes I wish John Lennon was right and all we needed was love, but unfortunately we need a lot of money. And this year we don't have the money, and that's been our biggest challenge here. I know that myself and others on this committee, we took a hard look at some of these things. I appreciate the effort of my colleagues in trying to address the situation. I got to admit, I mean that this bill, man, I'm not exactly excited about it. I won't be gleeful when I agree with passing it out, knowing that we're going to have to pull a substantial amount of money from savings. But I do recognize that, one, there is another body, and for the first time since I've been here, I'm actually looking forward to seeing them actually cut as opposed to add stuff back in. So a little request of my colleagues down the hall. But I also recognize we're going to spend some time this summer. I look forward to joining my co-chairs and addressing some of these issues. We only had 3 weeks, really, to address the things that we had, and I think we did our best to make an effort, and there's some things in here that I think both sides don't like. There are a few things that I had to compromise on that I agreed to add back in that, thankfully, because of a few of my colleagues, they were willing to also move off of the dial that they were on, for which I thank them for that, so we could all we all had a little bit of say in those discussions. But I just want to remind Alaskans that before the cuts that we made, this was $20,000 per household. And I just want everyone to remember that if we don't come back next year, if we don't spend our intern working on this, that we're sending the public into a spiral that we've never seen before. Oil will not save us this time. And if it did come back, it would be the worst thing for us. Because every time before, oil came and saved us, and we found ourselves not making the decisions we needed to, which got us to this point. So this interim, I look forward to working with my co-chairs, working with my colleagues, and making an effort to come back next year and cut more, have deeper discussions about things that we weren't willing to touch before, about education, about Medicare, so that we can ensure that that $20,000 doesn't land on the on the shoulders of every household that's out there, because they can't afford it. Of course, neither can the state. So with that, thank you for everyone for your effort, and I look forward to continuing to work with you in this monumental task that we have ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on House Bill 72 from the members? Mr. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and be brief. We spent a lot of time here last night. I think an awful lot of what needs to be said has been said last night, but I want to thank you and the other co-chair for guiding us through a pretty thorough, detail-oriented, long, I mentioned thorough, open process on working on this budget. Cutting $225 million from the budget is a tremendous achievement and not to be looked at lightly. I want to thank the staff, both the House Finance Committee staff, Legislative Finance, and my personal staff, who did such a hard job working late days and nights for us and for me. As a former staffer, I know that we, as legislators, get the credit or the blame, though we couldn't do the work without the staff, so thank you. We do face significant budget challenges. We said it last night, we'll say it again. We just have less money to spend, and I'll say it again, we have unlimited needs and limited desires, but limited resources. And our mission as legislators is to make decisions, some hard decisions, some unpleasant decisions, but they're responsible decisions in the face of our budget challenges. Some people wanted bigger cuts. Some people wanted to add money back to the budget beyond the reductions. We heard the education advocates looking for more and more money. Any budget is a compromise. It's a very complicated document. It's a very complicated process. There's lots of back and forth, but again, the bottom line is $225 million reduction is a tremendous achievement in non-formula and $377 million reduction in formula and non-formula. It's a great start, but again, it is only a start. Our budget challenges remain. I'll echo the co-chair's comments earlier, Mr. Representative Thompson. This is a first step. We will be back after a long, hard-working summer. We'll be back with sharper perspective on our departments and our budgets. And we will of necessity have to sharpen our budget tools because the deficit's not going away. My constituents and people you've heard from want more cuts, and they'll be coming. And I look forward to the work and look forward to working with all of you to do that. Thanks.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. I first want to extend my appreciation to both of you as co-chairs. I think you've done a really good job and shepherding us through a process that in my several years on this committee probably has been the most difficult. Cutting the budget in a significant way is no easy task. It involves a lot of hard choices. It involves, on one hand, saving one program but maybe taking money out of another program. So we have to make value judgments that all of us would acknowledge we had to make in really a short period of time. I think I'd like to, in the spirit of some brief closing comments here, echo what my colleague across the table said, that this is really long-term in nature. And I think part of our challenge, in as much as it's the challenge of all of Alaskans, is to go out there and educate people on what it is we can and cannot, you know, easily cut in the budget and the choices that we have, and the reality that we're going to have to look at other sources of revenue. There's no two ways around it to make this work in the long term. And I think it's really incumbent upon us as we go and look at agency budgets and scrutinize additional reductions and downsizing and decisions about priority, that we work to educate our own constituents and we work to educate Alaskans as a whole about we may be, in fact, entering into a whole brand-new fiscal regime that none of us anticipated 6 to 8 to 10 months ago or so, that we may be turning a corner where, as Representative Pruitt said, oil's not going to save us this time. And that's a pretty scary reality. So where we're at today, the cuts that we've made, you know, arguably are very judicious cuts. I would posit that. But at the same time, it's the start of what could be many years of having to realign state government with a fiscal reality that has changed so dramatically. It was just back in 2008 where we were earning almost 10 to $11 billion in oil revenue. Now we're down to 2.1, 2.2 with a budget that's north of $5 billion, even with the reductions. So I'm going to work with my constituents. I've been working with them, and I would encourage all my colleagues to do the same. And, again, I'll close by saying I think good work by the committee, and it's just a start.
Jim Gunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank you for the work and certainly the staff. I made a comment to the staff. The CS on our table was not hot. Usually when you come into the room after a finance committee budget, it's hot because it's just been done, because they've been working so hard and long that the Xerox machines are overheating. So I want to thank everybody for the work they've done. This is a, at the best of times, this is a difficult process. But there's a lots of, there are lots of things that are on the table that we danced around. A lot of people in the community, in the building and outside, talk about sustainability. We need to get back to a sustainable level. And I'm not sure they understand what that means, even balancing the budget, if that's what they mean. We are, for the size of the state outside the just the operating budget, we're fairly comparable to where we were in the 80s. People won't have a hard time understanding that, but you know, they could just, the budget books that are available to everybody have the graphs, and people can look at them. People don't understand outside of the building that if the price of oil shoots back up, it doesn't mean we're out of the situation we're in now. We have a problem with production levels and pass through in the pipe. We danced around, well, we didn't really address it. I had one amendment that addressed a $200 million reduction in this year's budget, but all that did was move it down the road. The nature of where we put the burden of the state wasn't addressed. We have two sides of the ledger sheet. We have expenses and we have income. I think in all of the state, a committee like this, in many states, these committees only do one of those functions. Somebody else does the other side. But here we do all of it, and we didn't address that side at all. And I don't think the public understands the nature of the gap and where it is and how severe it is, that if we let every state employee go, like Representative Garris said, if we let every state employee go, we'd still have a $3 billion gap. The nature of what the state is and what we need to be doing and what we're supposed to be doing, if it's nothing else, it's educating our children. There's lots of things we can't avoid. You know, what should we be doing? What shouldn't we be doing? There's many cases, many opportunities where we haven't done things simply because, well, we shouldn't be doing those things. But as a result of not doing those things, other things that we have to do go up. We have the recidivism rate. We know the rates of various people and children, that if we don't address issues which cost the budget money, then we have to build more prisons. That's a dialogue we've had, and we'll continue to have that. I think we're at a point, and it's been talked about in other ways, is we have to think about, severely think about, what is the nature of the state? What does the state come to the table to do? And besides the constitutional requirements, there's moral requirements, and there's historic requirements, that perspective that our founding fathers talked about. We have to, regardless of the budget, we have to consider the nature of building a state. Because at some point, the level, when people talk about sustainability, the founding fathers in this state and the conversation in Congress talked about keeping us on our feet until such time that we can be self-sufficient. We have a long way to go. Fortunately, we have the development of the Internet, which has closed a lot of gaps. There's a huge issue with gaps and distance gaps. how do you get services out to people that have no road? How do you get services out to people, educational opportunities that are hundreds of miles away? Well, those gaps are closing thanks for technology, and we've addressed that in many ways, and I really appreciate that, and I mean that sincerely. But at the end of the day, who are we and how we define ourselves? I think it's education. That includes job training, where we're not addressing those in a thoughtful enough way. We could make the same decisions, but I don't think we're getting to the place where we're educated ourselves enough to make the budget reductions that we're doing. And just simply have a sustained society. We all have different examples of that, or impressions of that. I got to Alaska as a young man in 1969. Eyes wide open, was amazed. Then I saw a boom cycle hit, which was the best you could call it, as a Wild West show. It was everything changed upside down. For better or for worse, I'm not sure how we've recovered from that. Hopefully, we're on the cusp of a huge economic development. But another major oil line. We have to be ready for that. I don't think we are. Do we have time? Probably. But we have to start planning for it better than we are. Besides the pipeline itself, it's the economic impact and the social and moral impact to our communities. And we're not going to be able to say we can't do it, because it's going to hit us square in the face. So the budget's a living document at this point. It's still very much alive, hasn't changed. We finished with it. This committee has finished with it at this point. Goes to the floor, goes over to the other side, comes back as I don't know what it will be. Then the conference committee will chop it all up and put it back together. And then it'll be out the door. And we'll have to go home and talk to our constituents about it and our friends and neighbors. And I'll talk about it in terms of more than just the numbers, because it's people's lives, and it's about tomorrow. So today we're done, but we still have tomorrow to deal with. We still have planning that has to happen. We still have to be prepared. The best of us prepare all the time. We're working on everything all the time. What's coming next? Does this prepare us for tomorrow? Personally, I don't think so. The little bit of money in the budget that we've reduced, well, it's quite a bit of money that we've reduced, it doesn't affect the graphs much to show what we're going to need to fill in the gap. But there are some small numbers that would have done a lot of difference for a lot of people. And all of us have moments in our lives when things changed, when we opened our eyes and realized something. And the best thing that we can do is give children those opportunities as well. And I think we cut a lot of those opportunities out of the budget. So I'm very concerned about that. But, Mr. Chair, we have a ways to go. I think we're about 41 days left. It's about half of a session. Things will change, and we have to be prepared for them. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right now I kind of feel like we're in a funeral, where I guess I'm just looking at a little different, because I think this gives us awesome opportunity for the state is getting out of the way for private business to flourish. Because what this budget does is the road to start to quit competing, not just competing with our funds with ourselves, through all the different types of training schools we have, the university and those others, but we have private business that can step up into these. I commend the chair for finding other funds that we could use to help bridge that gap and step some of these groups down versus an all or nothing. And I guess the challenge is, are there other funds like you know, possibly the power cost equalization at some of those funds. It's almost $1 billion that can be utilized out in those areas to bring up energy, you know, more energy, because that's kind of what that fund was, so that more windmills, maybe more dams, so that we're not just taking care of that little bit of need, but the greater needs in those kinds of areas. So, you know, I think that first step of looking at the higher education fund, saying, let's step it into these things. That's what gets us to students who then can get the scholarship program, who can then go to the training programs. I mean, it's opportunity. The state was never meant to be the one to pay for everything. Of course, it's the easier way to go. But have you ever wondered why we're on the bottom when it comes to private business? It's because they can't compete with the coffers that the state has had. So now we are being forced to step back. You know, the university budget, you know, 18% is what most states put into their universities because there are other ways to fund it. And I look forward to this year to working with the regents of looking at those models and how do we bring it. How do we also go into some of the communities where we have great training schools, we have the university, we have residential schools that we just put into play more, and how do we take all three of those entities and combine into one amazing opportunity for our students? So maybe I'm at a different meeting or I was at a different meeting last night, but I'm excited about what this can mean for our state. We actually will grow in areas that we've never had that choice, that chance to do since probably statehood before we actually were state and had the money and decided what we should and shouldn't put it into. I think our entrepreneurship that we have with the residents that we have here will show us amazing things. And yes, is this somewhat of a death of our government system? I think it is. But I don't think that's necessarily bad. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. And so, like I said, maybe I was at a different meeting. Maybe I just got a lot of sleep last night because a lot of the stress was off. I'm not sure. But I truly believe in those people who come to Alaska. I've always told people who come here, they hate it or they love it. And those who hate it, leave. And those who love it, make a home here to be able to start a life that's not there in the lower 48. We have the opportunity that no one else has, and now we're going to get to see what happens with that. So, yeah, are these hard cuts? Absolutely, they're hard cuts, but they probably need to be done a long time ago. We actually got into things that we never belonged in the first place. And we'll disagree with that. I mean, we're on opposite sides, right and left. That's okay. But mark my words, we will see a new, as our chair has said, we will see a new way government's doing it. And I think it's going to be a better state because of it, because we're going to let people take their dreams, utilize them, and make our lives better here because government isn't getting in the way of our residents. So thank you very much for the hard work. I know that, you know, our chair has lost lots and lots of sleep and many weekends trying to put all this together. And now it really goes to us as chairs of saying we're going to go out there in the summer and we're going to do our work. I will be at the regent meetings. I will be, you know, seeing whether we need to split this up into smaller areas, taking the training that we have for the Labor Department and quit duplicating and making sure we have top-notch training, not mediocre because we've split ourselves too thin. So, you know, I look forward to this. I think the opportunity is there. We just need to take it. So thank you very much.
Representative Wilson. Representative Munoz, do you have anything to say?
I'll just close by thanking you both. I think it was a very good process. You were very fair. We all worked very hard. I think we made some difficult decisions, but when we found that some areas of the budget perhaps were cut too deeply, you were willing to entertain revisions to the budget. I think it was a very fair process, and you know, I think it's going to be an ongoing effort, and I think, as Representative Wilson said, Alaskans are very resilient, and I think they will come. We will come together, and we will find solutions, and we will look at doing things in a more innovative way. This is a time of opportunity. It's a time of challenge, but it's a time of opportunity as well. And again, I want to thank you for your leadership and willingness to work together as a team.
Thank you, Representative Munoz. Representative Kawasaki, any comments?
Just being the freshman on the panel, I appreciated the work of the committee process when there were cuts that were, I think, substantial in things like the university, labor and workforce development, our our programs dealing with seniors and disability services and senior adult daycare and the youth courts. I've appreciated members coming forward and trying to find some money to support those. I will say, though, that this is a I recognize that this is a tough budget year. I think what we've been saying all along is that there need to be some pretty significant cuts. But with a budget deficit the size that we're facing, those cuts can't be levied on the people who are the most vulnerable, our seniors, our kids. We've cut things substantially, like early education, that we know has a huge return on investment. That is a cut that I think we will see that we will have to pay later on in higher incarceration costs, court fees, public safety. So I think there's a lot of work that's left to be done. I also find it really challenging because I know that there are constituents that have said that they'd like to see cuts. But when they hear that we are increasing our oil and gas tax credit section 12% next year to $700 million when the pipeline continues to decline, I think that that is a reality that folks would also like to know, that we are spending a lot of money on things like oil and gas development, putting all our eggs in one basket. We were promised 1 million barrels of oil at some point in time, and if we can get to 1 million barrels of oil, then we've got a budget that works. But under Senate Bill 21, we've seen the numbers, we've seen the fiscal sensitivity graphs. Even when our the price per barrel increases to some point, it doesn't help us one bit at the production rates we're currently at. And so I think it's fair that there are cuts to be made. I think that they should be levied not on the backs of the most vulnerable Alaskans, though. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll wrap it up. So we started this process with the governor's proposed budget put forth by Governor Walker. It was Governor Parnell's budget on December 15th. His staff, his new staff, many of them brand new to their job, worked fairly diligently, very diligently, to try and get us a budget that we could work with. We started out our process having budget overviews with the commissioners in the first week. We wrapped them up within the first couple of weeks. I believe that's the fastest time that those have ever been done. We started our budget finance subcommittees. We're starting in the first week. They could get back in there and start reviewing what the departments did, what their work was. And then we got the numbers, the amended numbers from the governor, from Governor Walker, about 3 weeks before we closed out. So the budget finance subcommittees were meeting 2 to 3 times a week, trying to make sure that they were able to get through those numbers. And they were numbers that were put through by every member in this body. It was a committee process. This budget represents the committee process in the House of Representatives. Majority members, minority members, the process that we have. It's a process that makes us good, makes us great. Is everybody happy with these numbers? I don't think anybody's happy with every number. Some would cut more, some would cut less. But it's a committee process. I held one standard, and it was going to make sure that it was a committee process the best I could, and it maintained that process. There's been talk about how some people are disappointed in this. Some are not. A $377 million reduction from last year in agency operations. Last year at this time, I believe we were looking at about a $51 million reduction. A 150% increase in reductions, I think that's pretty high. Why did that happen? Was it irresponsible spending by the legislature prior? It happened because we lost 60% of our revenue in the last 6 months.
This deficit is the cause because we do not diversify our economy. 90% of our revenue depends on one source. That's what happened to this budget. We need to work to diversify our economy. We need to work to find more sources from the resources that we develop. Alaska is a resource development state. We need to continue to provide opportunities for private industry to invest their dollars into Alaska. We do not have capital dollars. We need to provide opportunities for them to invest their capital dollars. This budget deficit happened because we lost 60% of our revenue in the last 6 months. I'm proud of the work these members have done. We've heard public comments. We added an extra day for public comments. I'm doing a quick math on that. I believe we had close to 20 hours in public comments. I believe we had between 800 and 1,000 emails, and I have read every one of them. Over 500 people in public comments. Those are rough numbers. I'm just trying to pull through my head. We listen to the public. We listen to Alaskans across this state. And we developed a budget that represents their views and our views as a combined effort. It's our job as legislators to dig down deep into this budget, much more than we could probably expect the public to do. We sit here every day doing this. We've done that for the last 49 days. Since day one, everybody's been working on this budget. That's a little bit about the process. There's been discussion about how there needs to be more. And I'm not going to... There's been discussion how we do plan to work throughout the summer and how we need, as finance members, to go out into our communities and make sure that they are more informed about the process that we do. I am committed to doing that. And I know that the rest of these members are committed to doing that. We need to remove statutes that remain on the books that cause our departments to have high budgets. Let's realize the fact that nothing we do is perfect. I asked Ledge Finance to go back 10 years. It could have been 20. We went back 10 years and looked at fiscal notes on legislation. We have prepared a document that goes back and looks at increases in personnel costs and general fund spending. We need to go back and remove laws off the books that cause these departments to have additional expenses, because we pass laws that make them do that. Maybe what worked 10 years ago does not work today. We need to go back and reexamine, do they make fiscal sense in today's fiscal climate? Do they make good business sense to make sure we have a good business environment so private industry can invest? Do they just make common sense? That is how we're going to continue to further reduce this budget. My office implemented last year an amendment in last year's operating budget, House Bill 266, that created a recidivism reduction group. We worked throughout the summer with many of the state organizations to reduce the cost, not just in corrections, but all the way up the line from public safety to courts to law, corrections, HESS, Mental Health Trust, Alaska Housing, all work together to come up and propose a plan to reduce the cost of the state. We're right now, even with the new Goose Creek Prison, we're at 101% full. We need to reduce those costs. We spend $158 a day keeping people incarcerated in our operating budget for corrections alone. We need to reduce those state agencies through a reduction recidivism plan. This committee supported a plan to do that, to partner with the Pew Foundation with very minimal dollars. which I feel will probably save ourselves tens of millions of dollars. A large part of this budget this year was mentioned in tax credits. Those were small producer tax credits, $700 million. Expected was $350 to $400 million. That's $250, $300 million more than was expected. Again, those are for producers, I believe, if I remember correctly, under Senate Bill R-21, that were for producers under 50,000. They're the small producers. And they're from statewide, as Representative Guttenberg mentioned earlier last night. Inlet and Prudhoe Bay mostly, a few Middle Earth. Those credits expire January 1, 2017, or not be available. So that means next year we'll probably be dealing with a half a year's, 6 months worth of credits that are done. We also allow them to cash their credits in 1 year as opposed to 2 years. That allowed those small businesses to have more fluid capital so that they could invest that money back into the state of Alaska to produce more oil. We look at the price of oil, and yes, we've heard in the past that oil was $9 a barrel, but they had 1.5 million barrels a day. We're down to less than $500,000 a barrel a day. The difference between $60 oil and $90 oil is minimal. It barely moves the line. We have to put more oil in the Trans-Alaska pipeline. That's what we did with Senate Bill 21. That's what it did with those small producers' credits, that $700 million. I would say that that shows that that was successful, in my opinion. Next year, do I expect those credits to be down? Yes, I do. ICER looked at this, along with Commonwealth North and many others in this state. They said that the legislature could reduce their current spending to the FY16 spending this year, get it to $5.5 billion, down to five, and then down to four and a half in a three-year process that would be responsible reductions. Can you just reduce all this and not know cause and effect? We have to be responsible in what we do, and that means knowing cause and effect, or doing the best we can to try and measure that out. I believe that that's why those entities, guided by ICER, along with them, suggested that reductions through a three-year process so that we do have a balanced budget process. This year, this committee brought that operating budget down to $5.4 billion. $100 million less, $100 million less than was recommended by ICER. With possibly $300 million less, $300 to $400 million less in tax credits next year, I'm surmising here, we could be close down to $5 billion next year easily. And then with further reductions, we might be able to get to that 4.5 in maybe 2 years. Am I disappointed in that amount of work? No, I'm not. But I spend a lot of time looking at these numbers. I eat, drink, live, and sleep them. Proud of the work this committee has done. There's more work to do. We've heard about that. We'll continue to scrub these numbers. We've had this budget a short time. We'll move it over to the Senate. I expect more discussions there and further reductions. With that, I would ask your support to move committee substitute for House Bill 72 from committee so that the rest of the body can vote for them this bill on the floor or have an opportunity to discuss it on the floor, version /G. Representative Kyle or Garrett, do you maintain your objection?
No. I remove my objection. I'll just make individual recommendations.
Objection removed? Representative Guerra removes his objection to moving /G. Version or House Bill 72. Is there any further objection? Seeing no objection, Mr. Co-Chair.
Well, go ahead and say
objection. Move. Go ahead and move the bill, please.
We did once. You want me to move it again?
Please move it for clarity.
I move that House Finance Committee move CS for House Bill 72 Finance, version 29-GH1780/G, out of committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you. And any objections? Hearing and seeing none, bill moves from committee. Members, remember, we do have to sign the committee sheet. We do have House Bill 73.
Yep.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 73. Mr. Co-Chair?
Mr. Co-Chair, under mental health, I move that the House Finance Committee move CS for House Bill 73 Finance, version 29-GH1782/E, out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We haven't really discussed House Bill 73 in the committee. The governor filed it. It's usually a non-controversial bill. And I just wanted to make sure there were no changes I don't know about in House Bill 73 since the governor's filing. I know we had the behavioral health change yesterday, but I think that came out of House Bill 72.
Okay. Did you read the bill?
I did.
Okay.
What I'd like to know is confirmation that there weren't changes in this committee.
That there was not changes from the committee?
We want to make sure there was.
Staff?
For the record, Pete Eklund, staff, Co-Chair Newman. Representative Guerra, the changes that were made to the regular operating budget to the different mental health programs just get rolled into the mental health budget, so there shouldn't be anything that you wouldn't be aware of. There was mentioned earlier in testimony, probably last week, from Ms. Brown that there was one capital project removed from the bill, which has kind of been standard practice where the Senate will put that capital project back in and remove others so we can be conferenceable items. That's just kind of been the standard practice.
Okay. Your objection?
Remove it.
Objection's been removed. Just for clarification, then, committee substitute for House Bill number 73. Version 29-GH1782/E moves from committee. Thank you, members. And thank you for the work you've done. And please stay here to sign the yellow sheet.